Hello and welcome to SourceCast episode number 23. I'm your host, Joey Lombardi. Last week I was so hung up on Meg Whitman's trash talking that I overlooked an interesting line in the podcast. It was a throwaway line when I was talking about IBM, and it was about their cognitive computing capabilities and how they're not only focusing on healthcare analytics, but information as a whole. Weather information, everything. And something clicked later in the week when I re-listened to the podcast, and I want to drill down deeper into that. It just so happened that Ginni Rometty was at the World Healthcare Congress this week, and she gave a keynote. So information about IBM's cognitive capabilities was prevalent in the news. Outside of IBM, we will cover EMC and Dell. It looks like some leadership decisions are being made. Microsoft is taking on the government, and we're going to talk about a larger trend of corporate entities taking on the government for human rights. That sounds enticing, right? I won't make you wait. Let's start the show. Sometimes it makes me nervous when I lead off with IBM stories, because I lead off with IBM stories quite a bit, and I don't want people to think that I'm a shameless shill for all things IBM. Truth be told, IBM just has a really good marketing department or a PR department. They just have more articles than a lot of the competitors, with the exception of Microsoft. Little inside track here, guys. Microsoft is killing me with the news feeds. They double what IBM puts out, and IBM puts out a lot. So there's a ton of information because they have Xbox, they have home electronics, they have a phone market. There's just a lot of news aggregation for Microsoft. But IBM typically has the most information in the specific areas that I'm researching. And because there's so much information with IBM, I can usually get a full spectrum of opinions, and I can form my own. So in that context, this week's lead story is about IBM's cognitive abilities with Watson. This is something that IBM has been pushing. Watson as a BI tool, Watson as an analytics tool, Watson as an information gathering tool. And perhaps Watson will be ubiquitous with cognitive computing. Like how we say Kleenex instead of hand me a tissue. Maybe we'll be like, go Watson me that. Or I'm going to Watson that thing up. And in reality, you're using an Amazon platform or a Noodle AI platform. The thing that's been impressing me about IBM is that they aren't just building a platform. They aren't just building an analytics tool. They are buying companies to feed to this monster. Whether it's marketing firms, whether it's healthcare firms, or an actual weather company. These things seem distributed now. They don't necessarily make sense as part of the bigger picture, but something is starting to click. What does a weather company have to do with a healthcare company? On paper, maybe nothing. But when you start to look at healthcare quality, and you look at a country like China, let's say you have sensors and healthcare analytics, you have a billion people walking around, and let's say they suddenly have a Fitbit or some kind of personal health tracking device, and you're getting millions of points of data per second from this enormous population, billions of points of data per second. And now you start to culminate that with weather sensors, air quality, humidity. You get a different context of the health information that you're getting because of some exterior data. In the literal sense, exterior data. Making those connections, building that kind of infrastructure takes foresight. And IBM is demonstrating it right now. The stock market might now reflect that. And this can be all hype, but there seems to be something more happening here. And it goes back to a comment that I made last week about controlling data. I mentioned last week that in IT, we have a tendency of saying we have a lot of junk data. And to drill down on that thought more, we don't have junk data. We have a bunch of data we've collected. And maybe through analysis, you'll determine that it is not necessarily necessary to capture that specific data and that you, in fact, need to capture other data. But that's part of a process. You need to go through capturing things, running reports on things to determine whether or not it's good or if it needs to be refined. So I don't have a problem with that. And in fact, what I think is becoming more apparent is more information needs to be captured. As I mentioned earlier, Ginni Rometty gave a keynote speech at the World Healthcare Congress. Rometty mentioned in this keynote speech, and I quote, "That invisible data will now be visible. When you combine those together, transformative capabilities will be possible. To name two examples, weather influences asthma. Exposure to crime influences your mental and physical health. This is why we created Watson Cloud. We spent $4 billion to acquire Fitel, Explorus, Merge, Truven, plus the Apple Research Kit. And that is to help fuel the acquisition of analytics of data as part of a broader process." In my viewpoint, they are literally talking about creating a data intake process that we've never seen before. And what is going to come out of this is we are going to see connections that we have never made in human history. And it's not to say that another company couldn't do this. It's just that they haven't. And it's not about building an awesome tool. It's about feeding that tool the information. And IBM is going to proprietarily own this data, these studies that are going to come out. it's going to be a different company because it's not just about a tool. It's about a subscription to information. Pay attention to this. While we're on the topic of IBM, let's talk about their potential earnings in the next few days. They're about to release the next round of quarter earnings, and we're expecting IBM to go down again. Why? They had a tough 2015 because they're still in the process of transferring to a cloud model. The economy isn't great. There's still sluggish IT spending, particularly on on-premise and data center hardware. That being said, Credit Suisse is stating that IBM's revenue will continue to be hurt by cloud through 2018. One of Credit Suisse's analysts states that the company will probably miss the $13.50 earning goal this year and probably deliver something in the round of $13.30. IBM is expected to stabilize in 2018. So my other big news theme this week is corporations as agents of social change. On the blog, over the last few weeks, I've covered IBM and several other technology firms' pushback on some southern states, specifically North Carolina, on some of their legislation around transgender rules and laws. Salesforce also did similar things in the states of Georgia, and now you're seeing a trend with Apple and Microsoft around privacy. Let's not for a second think that this particular fight is about consumers and our rights. This is about protecting their products. We know that Apple's been fighting the CSA, trying to prevent them from being court-ordered to hack their own firmware and operating system to grant access to a terrorist's phone. But now Microsoft is getting their hands dirty as well. They did support Apple in their fight against the CSA, but now Microsoft is suing the U.S. government, specifically the Department of Justice, and is asking the courts to declare the government secrecy orders as unconstitutional. Effectively, Microsoft wants to be able to notify its users when the government is petitioning to get access to their information. For all the legal nerds out there, Microsoft's suit, which was filed on Thursday, targets Section 2705B of the Electronic Consumer Privacy Act, which grants the government power to use secrecy orders that bar companies from informing customers that they are being targeted in investigations. Microsoft claims it has received 2,600 secrecy orders over the past year and a half, and it says the majority of those don't have definitive end dates. In other words, even if you are exonerated by the government, in most cases, Microsoft is still barred from telling you that the government asked for information about you. I'm personally more concerned about an advertising company or a large company reaching into my profile, understanding my behavior patterns, understanding my buying history, and trying to do targeted sales and psychological marketing to me than I am about the government snooping around. I suppose if I was up to something shady, I'd be more concerned. But the reality of the situation is I'm much more concerned about being manipulated psychologically through an ad than I am about Uncle Sam poking around. But that's just me. Speaking of Uncle Sam, a decision will be made soon to determine whether or not Dell can legally acquire EMC. And along those lines, Dell and EMC are certainly moving forward as if this acquisition is going to happen. And two things have occurred this week. Number one, EMC veteran Howard Elias will be taking over as president and chief operating officer of EMC's Global Enterprise Services. Elias is a veteran in the IT industry, and this was an expected move. In a somewhat unexpected move, there are rumors that EMC is trying to sell off Documentum. Documentum was acquired by EMC in 2003 and is known to be a highly complex tool. Some of the chatter on the street is, since Documentum has sort of been integrated into the suite of products of EMC, and that EMC's growth as a product suite was more of a hodgepodge of acquisitions that they eventually folded into one platform, there's questions of how easily they can rip this particular piece out and sell it off. Is that an indication that maybe more will be coming out of that core suite offering? Only time will tell. In some good news for EMC slash Dell, the combined company will overtake Hewlett-Packard Enterprise's quote-unquote crown in the cloud market. The merged company looks to outstrip Hewlett-Packard Enterprise as the top earner in IT cloud infrastructure. Dell and EMC's combined cloud IT infrastructure revenues for 2015 total $5.3 billion, which is ahead of HP Enterprise's $4.5 billion. And we're going to close out this week with some news that you can use. This goes out for all my sourcing nerds out there. Sourcing innovation is going to make you ask the question, why are you creating an RFP hell? What is an RFP hell? That's when you start to pull in a bunch of suppliers that probably have no business in an RFP, but you're doing it just to throw bodies into the mix. And then you're throwing out 60 or 70 page documents to fill out. And you're making it an extremely complex process. And sourcing innovations basically says, this is not a good thing to do. A company with a reputation for putting its potential suppliers through RFP hell is not one that many suppliers will want to deal with. The more suppliers' peers complained about RFPs with Company X, the fewer are the suppliers who will even acknowledge the existence of said RFP or respond to it. They continue by saying, as the word of RFP hell from Company X spreads, The only suppliers that will respond to an RFP from Company X are those that are desperate, those that are in bad financial shape, and those without a stable customer base. These are not suppliers that you want to deal with. So suddenly you create a self-fulfilling prophecy of inadequate suppliers because the good suppliers have been chased away through process, with air quotes, process. Sourcing Innovation states that if you absolutely have to have a supplier fill out a lengthy RFP, make sure that the RFP is well written. And if you have to cast a wide net to find new suppliers, start with a small RFI that requests just enough information to determine whether or not an RFP response from the supplier can seriously be considered. That's pretty basic information for a seasoned sourcing professional, but good to share nonetheless. And I want to thank you for sharing your time with me and listening to this podcast. We will be back next week with episode number 24. Take care.